From awaytogarden.com and robinhoodradio.com, this is A Way to Garden with Margaret Roach, your weekly invitation to dig in and grow.
Maybe you can feel it where you garden too. A slight shift in the weather, which combined with shortening days means summer is loosening its grip. It's not fall yet, it's not cleanup time, but what time is it in the garden right now? Kendrys and I are each underway on projects that are just perfect for this moment, for the in-between time, from sowing biennials to collecting seed of some annuals to eradication of enthusiastic ground covers and more that we want. Oh, he's laughing already, that we want to tell you about. But first, these messages.
Programming and underwriting support from Brushwood Nursery. For more than 20 years, Brushwood Nursery has shipped the finest selection of clematis and other vines all over the United States with full gallon-sized plant and free shipping. Their website is full of beautiful pictures and information on growing clematis. Brushwoodnursery.com. Programming and underwriting support from Garden Tool Company. Garden Tool Company's wide selection of heirloom quality tools for your gardening passion is backed by outstanding customer service, fast shipping, and ongoing support. GardenToolCompany.com.
Author and photographer and old friend Kendrys, the guy who was laughing a second ago, joins us again today as he does each month to talk plants. And this time he wants to tell us what he's sowing and more. Hi, Ken. How are you?
Oh, I'm fine. I guess I thought you were amusing. You are amusing.
I'm amusing. I've lost it completely. Before we get started, I guess because you've given me a preview that you're sowing and collecting seed madly over there, we should definitely pair this up, the transcript of this show on awaytogarden.com, up with another giveaway of your propagation book, Making More Plants, because it's always the most popular thing there. Everybody's so excited about that book because it's such a great manual. So we're going to have that with in the comments with the transcript of the show. So what the heck are you doing over there?
Well, you know, this idea started because I when we talk, I think, what am I doing? Oh, yeah, I'm collecting seed of things that are ripening, which is, this is the perfect time to keep your eye out for seeds, especially of ornamental plants that you want to come back next year. And I know you've got an abundance of Angelica gigas. So those biennials, the plants that either sow themselves right now, or we can collect the seeds and scatter them, or we can collect the seeds and start them indoors in the winter. But it's time to catch those seeds before they drift away. And, you know, like the Angelica, I can't grow gigas. We've talked about that. But I can grow Archangelica and Atropurpurea. You ever seen that one with purple stems? It's so beautiful. And Pachycarpa, sorry.
He's talking Latin, folks. He's already, we haven't even gotten That's 5 minutes
names.
In.
And you know, I'll bet the Angelica Atropurpurea is the purple-stemmed Angelica, but I made that name up.
Oh, yes, and so some of those Angelicas are biennial, as you said. What are some of the other things when you look around that you have in the garden that you would be targeting? Because you said you don't do well with that, with the Angelica, the gigas that I grow, that's kind of got those big wine-colored umbels of flowers at this time and following, that are followed a big, beautiful purplish-green bud.
Weird because the other ones do quite well for me, and they're forming their basal rosettes, kind of flat growth, which next year, just like a lettuce plant, will bolt. They'll shoot up their flower spikes. Sometimes with Archangelica, it's 7 or 8 feet tall. It's got some moisture.
Right. And that's a good, what you just said when you said basal rosettes. One of the important things, and this is, maybe we'll get to this later, but know how to recognize these babies, because if they sow themselves or if you sow some of them outside, you don't want to destroy them accidentally later. You know what I mean?
Right.
Yeah. So sometimes that takes a little homework, looking things up. And I always love when websites show or reference books show the seedling, you know, the babies, as well as the grown-up plant. Anyway, okay, we'll get to that later.
Well, digitalis, and I don't have so much luck with the regular foxglove that everybody loves for some reason. I think this is all due to my sandy soil. They want a little more moisture.
Right.
But the other digitalis, like Ferraginia, is that the one? And Lantana, I think, is one. And Lutea, which is this little plant. Well, the plant's not that little, but the flowers. The spike is covered with these creamy yellow little flowers, but it's covered with them. And that self-sows, or you can collect the seed, or you can sprinkle the seed where you'd like it to grow. And it's not a big thug. It just usually one plant will drop a seed and or lots, and then you'll get one plant again. I do sow verbascum. I have a hybrid verbascum that I collect its seed, my own seed from, and I scatter those. Sometimes I'll cut off the flower spike and lay it where I want the plants to grow next year. And they'll sprout right away and form those rosettes for next year. Sometimes, actually, it takes 2 years. They'll sit as rosettes for 2 years, but you can really recognize them because they're big, flat, hairy things in a beautiful way. Hollyhocks are kind of, sometimes they're short-lived perennials, like Aquilegia. Now, what's the common name for Aquilegia?
Columbine.
Oh, yes, of course. They're short-lived perennials. You know, if you grow columbine, you're lucky if you get 2 years out of them, but you'd sow the seeds now outside to have them bloom next year and maybe even the year after. Lunaria, do you ever grow Lunaria?
I haven't. Now, is that money plant or something
Right.
Yeah.
Or silver dollar plant. As
silver
a
dollar, right, right.
And there's lavender ones are the species, and there is a white cultivar, and there's a variegated one too. But the white and the lavender ones are good plants and not too aggressive for me. I usually get one plant after where there used to be one plant. And they grow about 2.5 feet tall, bloom the second year. And they're fragrant. They're members of that big brassica family. So like a plant that we try not to grow, the Hesperus, it has that really nice kind of powdery, clovey smell.
So it's the Hesperus... I'm sorry. The Hesperus is the Dame's Rocket, which is an invasive from an alien plant from a plant from elsewhere that's sort of taken over a lot of our woodland edges and roadsides and so forth. So we don't grow it. Whereas if you were to read, and you're making me think of like Sarah Raven, the English gardener, well-known English gardener. If we were to read her list, I bet, of biennials on her website or something that she's written, we would see Hesperus on the list of doing what you're just saying. And we'd also, she's crazy about the Lunaria, the money plant. She loves that, both the purple and the white. So there are some places where one of these biennial self-sowers or annual self-sowers is too enthusiastic or not appropriate, and other places where it is. So if people are listening, even across the country from us, we're in the Northeast, you know, in California, some things may not be good on the list for there, right?
Yeah, like fennel that grows on the side of the road everywhere there. But Hesperus, I believe, is European. So for Sarah Raven, it's a native plant.
Maybe. Correct. And that's what I'm saying, is that the list has to be tweaked according to appropriate to the garden, of course, aesthetically and all that's important, but also environmentally speaking. And so it's going to differ from place to place. You didn't say dianthus. Now, have you ever grown dianthus? Any of the little pinks or whatever? Do they self-sow?
Not for me.
I was curious.
Sometimes they don't even bloom. I have silver foliage that hangs on for a couple of years, and I don't know.
I've always wondered about those, like what comes next, but maybe I'm wrong.
There are annual ones and there are perennial ones and there are the alpine ones. And they're carnations also. So maybe you're growing a hardy annual.
Yeah, maybe it's the annual kinds that do. And you said larkspur. Did you say larkspur?
Well, larkspur is a hardy annual, and opium poppy is a hardy annual. So they're exactly
okay.
And like I said, short-lived perennials; those aren't exactly biennials.
Yeah, yeah.
And opium poppy also. I usually sow opium poppy on the snow in winter, but that's just fun.
Yeah.
So, and that's how, and it loves it. Wants that cold.
So you said, I jumped ahead, I'm sorry, to sort of like collecting seeds of annuals that like to self. So, but you said a little bit ago, sowing the seeds now outside. Mm-hmm. And so do you take your cue from the plants? Like, well, you see them setting seed and you say, hey, this is a good time? Or like, what's
that's how this whole thing started for me.
Okay.
I've got a really nice Nicotiana that's very fragrant and it's tall. And every flower turns into a fruit. And, you know, people think that fruits are juicy, but there's sort of two kinds of fruits. There's moist fruits like a raspberry, but there's dry fruits. Anything that has seeds inside of it is a fruit. And the Nicotiana, I don't know what you'd call them, fruits, dry fruits, are like little open urns. They're like a little bigger than a quarter of an inch. And if you tip them over, scores of seeds will pour out. So I try not to tip them over until
I have
a cup under them. I take a cup out to the garden and I just turn them on their sides and the seeds pour out. And then I save those seeds in usually a little white envelope. I guess they sell them for stamps collecting or something. And I seal the envelope and I put that envelope dry in a jar, which I store in the refrigerator until I need them. But I also let some of those seeds drop where they are. And it's not an annual, actually. It's a tender perennial, but it acts like an annual. It blooms the first year, and some of those seeds will fall to the ground, and maybe one or two for me will grow. For you, they all grow.
And maybe 1,000 or 2,000 for me will grow. And that's really because of where I had my first ones sow and colonized was in the cracks and crevices, for better or worse, in a patio sort of an area. And they love that spot. And so they really do well there. And I get maybe too many of them. So this kind of brings up, okay, so that's a little bit about timing, how you were inspired, like with mm-hmm. the Nicotiana, with the flowering tobacco, you were inspired to a moment ahead of it dispersing the seed itself, you tipped it into a bag or a jar. Yeah.
They'll just pour out in the breeze if you don't get them.
Right. So you took the cue from there. And you've mentioned a couple of times about, like, I think with the verbascum. Mm-hmm. And maybe the last time we spoke, when we were talking about like taking cuttings, another form of informal but doable sort of DIY propagation that anyone can try. We talked about like taking cuttings from coleus and so forth on the last show. And so I guess what I wanted to know is, do you, besides anticipating the timing, do you prepare the space to lay down that verbascum seed head? Or because what I found is that I made a bad mistake this year because, you know, we were all so crazy this year. I mean, look, we're under so much stress collectively. And so I wasn't having my events, my public events. And so I just sort of was like, okay, let's clean up and mulch the whole garden and then forget about it. You know, it wasn't timed to be ready for something in particular. So I shifted the timing of when I did things. And I sort of shot myself in the foot because I mulched two areas where I had Verbena bonariensis, the tall verbena with the purple heads. I mulched them too early. Looked great, cleaned up. Hey, I'm ahead of the game. I was so proud of myself, patting myself on the back. And guess what I don't have any of now, and the butterflies don't have any of now? Yes, because that pallet, that bed, I zonked them. I mean, I deprived them of light and who knows what else that they might have liked. And they couldn't come up through the inch or two of mulch.
Yeah.
So what do you do besides timing? What else is your sort of preparatory thinking?
Well, your Nicotiana is a good example. So first of all, if they're coming up where they're coming up, they like where they're coming up. So one place you might sow some seed or encourage seeds to fall are where the parent is, because they like that. And you've got that gravelly area that the Nicotiana was crazy for. So if I'm looking for a situation to have more of those plants, I'll try to make it like the parent. You know, I'll look for something like the parent. And with a biennial that's kind of wildish, I don't think I would put it in the rows of a garden bed or something, you know, like a vegetable bed. I'd want it to look a little accidental. So I just look for a place that's pretty much like the place that the parent's growing in. Does that make sense?
It does. And to remember that this seems obvious, but it's not. You know, we get to raking 2 months later and leaves have fallen on top of the place and right. We get to raking and guess what happens? We do ourselves in. We undo what we did. Like I think we have to mark off these nurseries, so to speak, these mm-hmm. moments, because otherwise we can rake them right up, or like I did, I forgot and I didn't let them sprout before the verbenas sprout before I mulched, and that was a mistake.
You know, that makes me think of something too. Biennials don't like to be moved.
No.
So if I have some nice basil rosettes that are in the middle of the path of a verbascum, sometimes I move them, but they end up, if they live, they end up being kind of small. So they want to be where they want to be and where they start. So that's something to think about too.
Yeah.
But I don't know if we have time to talk a little bit about collecting seed.
Oh, I think we should. I think we should just keep on keeping on. Definitely. And, but you said they don't like to be moved. And I think because I move around, speaking just one last thing on the biennials, I move around at this time of year, so late summer, early fall, once the rains start again somewhat, mm-hmm. so that the soil is moist and they're hydrated, I do move around that angelica.
I knew you were going to say that.
Paint pictures with it, so to speak. Because this is the thing about these biennials and self-sowing annuals. They want to give you more free plants. They want to produce. They're happy if they're in a good space and you don't screw it up by either raking up the area, either in fall cleanup or the next spring cleanup, either, or dousing it with mulch like I did. They want to cooperate. However, they're not the best designers sometimes. They will be spontaneous.
Oh, they come up in the wrong place.
Yeah, or you get 500 of them in one spot and you wish you had some across the path also to flank the path, or you wish you had some in another bed to repeat the theme of that moment in your garden more widely and so forth. So this is a good time, as is early spring, to move. I can move some if they're really not too far advanced, and if it's moist, you know, consistently moist. So anyway,
and do you try to take a lot of, you know, you try not to disturb the roots, obviously.
I try to take a wedge of soil, so to
exactly.
speak.
Exactly.
Yes.
And you wouldn't prick it out like a seedling.
I would not, and I not bare root it if I don't have to, and I would. So I would probably use my hori-hori, my Japanese weeding knife, mm-hmm. and kind of cut a little wedge of soil. Yeah. So anyway, I didn't mean to stop you from going on to collecting seeds, but just that was a thought.
Well, I get this thing all the time that people don't realize that dry fruits are fruits. You know, that peas are in a pod and that pod will ultimately turn brown and be dry, and that'll be a fruit. And it's where your seeds are. And you can take those peas and dry them and then you can sow them. But there's so many fruits that are, I mean, there's as many fruits that are dry as there are moist fruits like a raspberry. And a lot of those dry fruits explode. They'll split along that seam. So if I've got something like a daylily that I want to collect the seed from and it's ripening, I'll put a paper bag over the stalk of the seed head and tie it. So when it explodes or splits open, I don't lose the seeds, which are pretty big. Or I'll cut that stalk and put it in a paper bag upside down and tie a rubber band around the bottom or something and hang it someplace where there's a lot of air circulation. And I label the bag with the name of the plant and the date, because you always forget, even though you think you never yeah. will forget. But those moist fruits, if I have a raspberry I want to sow the seeds from, which I don't generally, but it's a good example, I'll smush it against a paper towel and try to get those seeds free, and then I'll wash them in a fine sieve, because in the case of moist fruits like Jack in the Pulpit with berries and things like that, it's often the moist flesh that keeps the seeds from sprouting in the wrong place at the wrong time.
Right.
So in all these cases, I want to clean the fruits. I don't want any chaff like you might have with wheat or rice or something like that. I grow an ornamental annual red rice that's just so gorgeous. But I clean all that stuff off because that usually has either insects or disease pathogens. And then I slip the dry seeds into an envelope in almost every case, not every case, and stick that in the refrigerator. And when I said not every case, there's some seeds that want to germinate right away, like our biennials, but they're even perennials. Now, we talked about hellebores just doing too well on their own. If only we knew that 30 years ago when we were paying so much for them.
And by that, you mean that the plant, once it gets established, will frequently, if you sort of pick up the leaves and look, you'll see a ring of tiny seedlings where the flowers have dropped their seed the previous summer.
Well, and, actually, two summers before, probably.
They take a while to germinate. So, and that's another thing, by the way, that I moved. I started with one area and then I repeated that, so sort of free hellebores. And this is a time of year when I do move them. I frequently wait till they're bigger, but a little bit bigger, like the second year after they appear. Mm-hmm. But you can move them really tiny as well. Anyway, so.
And
seeds.
You can mow them.
Right, when they jump into the lawn. Right.
Jump into the lawn. And when I first encountered that, I thought, oh no, these, and I usually give them away. I shouldn't do it.
Yeah.
But there's the mower, there's the babies in the lawn path. Yeah. What am I going to do? Oh no.
Yeah. So you would anticipate before the thing is going to split, this pod, this fruit, this dry fruit is going to disperse. I mean, like with the poppies, if you don't get it and then you have a windy day and that pod, they're just going to fly all over the place. They're so tiny, you can't find them on the ground. In the vegetable garden, if a bean or a pea pod splits, like scarlet runner beans happens all the time. And, late in the season, and I find the seed on the ground. Well, it's pretty easy to find. It's the size of my thumbnail, but I'm not going to find Nicotiana seedlings. I'm not going to find poppy seeds. So what else are you collecting? What are you looking for besides seed wise?
Well, Nicotiana, daylilies, hosta, which are perennial, my primroses, I cut the stalks when they're just turning brown. Otherwise, they get moldy. It's funny. And then I stick those in a paper bag, like I described. Nasturtiums, alliums. You can collect the seed of alliums. Cleome, Rudbeckia, Black-Eyed Susan. Cosmos, Impatience. They're annuals, but you can collect the seeds of those. Morning Glory set seed in their fruits, and the Moonvine. Gigantic, really cool fruits, actually. 4 o'clocks, the columbines I mentioned. You mentioned larkspur. Feverfew, Tanacetum. Wow,
right.
That's a big list.
And something like calendula, if you don't want it to sow itself all over your vegetable garden, but you do want to have it, either for edible flowers next year or just for enjoyment, collect the seed heads now or when they formed. Because otherwise it's just going to be all over the damn place and you're going to end up weeding them out probably. In the last couple of minutes, I wanted to ask you, you just said primulas. So, you collect the seeds, but then what? When is that? Because that's one I'd like to do better with. When do you then sow them, and do you sow them indoors or what do you do?
I've done a lot of different things. And the most success I ever had was to put the seeds on the surface of medium in a big flat, like a nursery flat that you collect, that you put pots in and take home. And then I cover that with this is what I actually did. I covered it with the kind of nursery flat that has sort of a pattern on the bottom, for drainage that's really open, or you could do it with some kind of wire or something, just so that animals don't go to this 2.5-inch deep thing. And then I put it outside. A place where it got snow on it and rain on it. And then in the spring, they sprouted. And I've tried a lot of different ways. I also do them in pots on gravel, but they want a cool time, cool period.
Okay.
So I just did it outside, and then I moved the seedlings.
Okay. Oh, all right. So in the introduction, of course, I mentioned I didn't know how many things you were sewing and collecting, but I mentioned that I've been on this binge for this perfect time in the garden again when it starts to be a little moist and it's cooler. I've been trying to eradicate some of my most ambitious and oldest areas of ground cover, that Lamiastrum vinca from the previous owner, not even me, et cetera. And I'd love to propose that we talk about that next, so that we both sort of put our thinking caps on and prepare to talk about sort of living mulch, pros and cons, and what is a good ground cover. And you know what I mean? I think that's an important question. I think we need to rethink it because a lot of them backfire.
Add Cassandra to your list.
Yeah. All right. So is that good? Can we do that next time?
That's good. And then sometime after that, we might talk about getting the plants in for the winter.
Oh, okay. Maybe we'll do both. All right. So I'll talk to you soon. Thank you.
Thank you.
Programming and underwriting support from Brushwood Nursery. For more than 20 years, Brushwood Nursery has shipped the finest selection of clematis and other vines all over the United States with full gallon-sized plant and free shipping. Their website is full of beautiful pictures and information on growing clematis. Brushwoodnursery.com. Programming and underwriting support from Garden Tool Company. Garden Tool Company's wide selection of heirloom quality tools for your gardening passion is backed by outstanding customer service, fast shipping, and ongoing support. GardenToolCompany.com.
And thanks to all of you for listening. Now, don't miss an episode. You can subscribe free to the podcast version of the show on Stitcher or iTunes or Spotify. You can find me anytime at awaytogarden.com or on Facebook or Instagram as @awaytogarden. And happy gardening and seed collecting and seed sowing meantime.
A Way to Garden with Margaret Roach is a joint production of awaytogarden.com and the smallest NPR station in the nation, Robin Hood Radio.